have not finished yet, but there's one more line. Namo Shi Zhu, he bi gu gu wei kong liu lei ne. Namo.
There's one more story you share with me on the topic regarding about thoughts and...
Yeah, thought we have formed the memory. Just now that topic there in the
room. In Mandarin you said something about that one, I forgot it.
In Mandarin?
I can remember now, forget the whole thing.
Oh yeah, qi xing tong lian. Wu lian jiu zhen xing. Okay, it's in the book. Wu lian jiu zhong xing is in the book. Qi xing tong lian qi wu ming.
Okay, I think while waiting for the rest, I will get Tammy to write something on the whiteboard. Because just now Richard was asking me on our morning sharing. We talked about the unreality of birth and death. When we are born into this world, we cannot bring along anything. Similarly, when we leave this world, we also cannot bring along anything. So the Mandarin has a very good saying. They say, Lai ye kong, qi ye kong, namo shi zhu, he bi ku ku, ku ku wei kong liu lei, namo shi zhu, Namo Shi Zhu何必苦苦 my wife, right? Namo Shi Zhu, he bi ku ku? Bi. Ku ku wei kong liu lei ne? Liu. Lei. Na. Okay, question mark. Very good. Then the other one, Wu Nian Ji Zhen Xing. No thought is true mind. Nian Tou De Nian. Wu Nian Si Zhen Xing. The other one, Dong Nian Ji Wu Ming. Dong Nian. Ji Wu Ming. So Richard, both are there. Just now I was talking about the Mahayana equivalent. Lai Ye Kong, Qi Ye Kong. Namo Shi Zhu, he bi ku ku wei kong liu lei ne? Then why do you grieve over emptiness in between? Then the other very good saying is, Wu Nian Si Zhen Xing. Without thought, that is the true mind. Then Dong Nian Ji Wu Ming. When there is thinking, activity, that is delusion. That's why avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara arise. Sankhara is thinking. Okay? Okay. I on the rest of the light. Yeah? We are at night, you better have the light. Okay. Tammy, you can continue, chapter 11. Yeah, the mic is there. Page 42, we shall continue. Chapter 11.
Okay. Chapter 11, Heart Sutta Class. Part 1.1. Our true mind or essence of mind is always there. True suchness or Ru Ru Putong in Mandarin. This is the reason why you cannot practice mindfulness or sati, and you cannot try to be mindful, because the trying and the practicing, or noting and doing, etc., are always by the thought. If one does not understand this true principle of the true mind, that is the essence of mind, is already there, we don't have to do anything to be mindful. Because the moment you are silent with inner awareness, you are already naturally mindful and heedful. And you will be able to see things as they are, naturally, to understand the truth and the reality arising within the moment. For if we do not stir the mind or cause it to arise, the thinking via our heedlessness or conditioning born of wrong views, then our mind will be quiet and silent without thought. Then it can be aware of this essence of mind, which is the natural state of silent inner awareness before the knowing. Hence, mindfulness or sati, which is the silent inner awareness, will automatically shine forth from the nature within, because man can only do one thing at a time. Either you are silent and aware within with your nature or essence of mind, or you are lost in thought and is preoccupied with your activities of mind or thinking and reacting, etc. Just like the analogy of the sun. The sun always there and its rays ever shining. But when the clouds are there, the rays cannot shine through. So similarly, your thoughts, your various emotions and reactions or stirring of the mind are like clouds obscuring your true nature or true mind from shining forth. Hence, your inability to see things as they are via the direct seeing with your silent or true mind. According to the Sutta on Dependent Origination as taught by the Buddha, the first three links are avijja paccaya sankhara and sankhara paccaya vijnanam. That is, dependent on ignorance arises sankhara or mental thinking or activities. Then, dependent on sankhara or mental activities arise mindor or mental consciousness or vijnanam. This is just a pure consciousness or awareness before the knowing or the perception and labeling, etc. That is, there is no one to see or to perceive objective seeing. As the true sati is without the observer, there is only an awareness of the phenomenon or the impersonal process of dependent origination arising from the pure awareness or the essence of mind, which is the unconditioned and without the thought, which is part of the egoic mind. All as per what the Buddha had often said, in the seeing, there is only the seeing consciousness, and there is no one to see or observe, because they are all conditioned arising naturally and causal phenomena. So this is the true understanding of anatta, within the dependent origination born of right view. Hence, no more sakkaya ditti or self-delusion. It is delusion that conditioned the living beings to cling and grasp onto the five aggregates of form and mind or the mundane mind. And this is the main cause of one's suffering. And because of the first two links of dependent origination, avijja paccaya sankhara, every moment of consciousness you will think and stir the mind because of your ignorance that conditions your habitual tendency to think the wrong thoughts, and this is how one becomes heedless. So if there is no wisdom or yoniso manasikara, wise attention, at every moment of sense experience, then the mind will be conditioned into craving via the link Vedana Paccaya Tanha, or dependent on feeling, craving comes to be. When there is no wisdom or wise attention at the moment of sense experience.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. So this part, I think, is easy to understand. Your true nature, your essence of mind, they are the unborn. Is all the time there, like our sun, the ray is ever shining. But because our planet rotates on its axis, so when you are on the other side, you cannot receive the sun's ray. That's why they call it night. Yeah. But when you are on the other side where you're supposed to see the sun, if there is cloud, it will obscure you. Again, you cannot see. So what are clouds? Clouds are like your thought, your content of consciousness, your emotion, your thinking, your fear, your phobia, your whatever mental thinking and activity. So when you are preoccupied with that, you lost the ability to be aware. That's why you are lost in thought. You are heedless. You think a lot. But the moment you stop thinking, you don't create any more emotion, any more thinking activity. Then the whole thing becomes like clear. Without the cloud, that nature shine forth. It's like the sun's ray shine forth. That's why you can have the pure awareness leading to the direct seeing. And human beings' problem is when you see something, you are so conditioned because the logic tells you, society tells you, you exist. The moment you are born, they give you a name. They say you are so and so. Then through external appearance, they define you. You Chinese, you male, you young boy, you adult, you old man, you middle age or whatever. So all this create the Sakkaya Ditthi. So you always think that there is a thinker behind the thought. There is somebody to see, to hear, to smell, to taste, to tactile feel and think. Because that is really logical. If you go and tell ordinary people outside that you don't exist, no one see, no one think, he say you cuckoo, you better go Tanjung Rambutan. But those who have the Dhamma with the awareness, with the understanding, they can understand. You are like the physics experiment. So this physics experiment is very easy to develop the understanding. In the school, in the olden days, we have this circuit diagram. Then we have a bulb here. So when you switch on the contact, what happens? The light bulb lights up, isn't it? The light bulbs light up. This is nature's law, automatic, isn't it? The lighting up is actually like your consciousness. You become conscious. So if let's say this organ is your eye, E-Y-E. Then this one is you are conscious of seeing. That's why the Buddha say, in the seeing is just a seeing consciousness, just the consciousness become aware, like up. But your brain very fast input the content. Then you have this self-delusion, Sakkaya Ditthi. Then you say, I see. You associate with the seeing. That's where you go wrong. That's why Krishnamurti, he also understands. He said the observer is the observed. Means what? There is this objective seeing. Means your seeing is objective, not subjective. You know why subjective or not? Subjective means got a subject. Somebody see. But objective seeing is just that consciousness. The thought that created the thinker perceive. So the observer, which is the thought, created the perception. And you go and separate the two. The perception comes from the thought that perceives. That's why the external form enters the mind. And there is only one entity. Observer is the observer. That's why when you are aware, the phenomena and the awareness is one. That's why when I see, after my mind transformed, I realize the Buddha was right. There was no observer. There was nobody to see, it's just a consciousness. Then the content that put in is due to wrong view, Sakkaya Ditthi, self-delusion. That's why they suffer, human beings suffer. Then they attach, they cling, they thought real. I see. So when you associate with the seeing, you have problem. Why? Because you react to what you see. Like and dislike. Pleasant and unpleasant. Then you give meaning. You create attachment. Then when you want things your way, you cannot get what you want, you suffer. That's how suffering comes about. So this physics experiment is very good. It can show it to you that consciousness is just a automatic nature's law because of that thing. Condition come together, dependent originating, it just come out. You need mindfulness, very stable mindfulness. You need the direct seeing to see all this, to understand all this. Okay? Yeah. Ah, yes. You use the mic. Yeah. Now use mine. Yeah.
Because when you use the word perceive, I can understand from an English text, but when I really look up in the dictionary, it says the way in which something is regarded, understood, or interpreted. So when you perceive something, it's the interpretation really taking place.
The input of your views, opinion already there.
That's why phenomena is defined as whatever that the mind perceives. The moment you perceive the word, the concept, the conditioning, all go in already. But before you really perceive the pure consciousness, that one is the pure vijnana. That's why that one is not a thought yet. The moment the vijnana receives the input of the content, then it becomes nama rupa, the second aspect of five aggregate of form and mind. And that is the thought. Okay? Tell me. Continue.
Part 2, question and answer, 2.1. Question 1, why did the Buddha say, "Verily, O Bhikkhu, should anyone, not necessarily a Buddhist, who cultivates this four foundation of mindfulness in this manner for 7 years, then by him, one of the two fruitions is proper to be expected, sainthood in the here and the now, or if some form of clinging is still yet present, the state of a non-returner or anagami, the third stage of the supramundane enlightenment, and why not at least a sotapanna or a sakadagami is to be expected?" Brother Teo replied,
So the question is very interesting. Because she is very contented with sotapanna, first stage of sainthood and now. So he said, why go so far, arahan or anagami? So you listen to my answer.
Brother Chiu replied, "Very likely it is because the Buddha knew that the four foundations of mindfulness is such a powerful cultivation that it can lead to at least the realization of anagami, if some form of clinging is yet present. The other reason can be that the sotapanna and sakadagami are still not free from the fetters of ill will and sensual desire, and they still have to come back to the sensual realm for at least one more life. This is the reason why the sakadagami is also called a once returner, whereas the anagami is called a non-returner, one who has no more delusion, but still some form of minor clinging on and conceit. The anagami will be born into the pure abode within the form or Brahma realm." 2.2.
Thank you. Tell me, I have to explain a bit. So this one you understand. The sotapanna and the sakadagami, they still have the fourth and the fifth fetter, ill will, sensual desire. At the second stage of sainthood, sakadagami, the ill will and sensual desire are only attenuated or reduced. The other reason is, when you look at the Avijja Sutta, you remember the Avijja Sutta? The seventh step, the first seven step. After you have the yoni-so-manasikara, and after you have the sati sampajana, daily mindfulness and clear comprehension cultivated, then you have the sense restraint, then you are able to arise the three way of right conduct. What did I tell you? When you reach that stage, you are at least a one. You are at least a sotapanna already, understand? Otherwise, you cannot have that type of mindfulness leading to the sense restraint. And the three way of right conduct. That is the other reason why. Well, the moment you do the satipatthana, you definitely go beyond sotapannaship and sakadagami. Because to do the four foundations of mindfulness, you need to have the initial wisdom, the daily mindfulness, sati sampajana, and the sense restraint and the three way of right conduct. So for you to reach that seventh step, you at least a sotapan. Yeah. And chances is you could be a sakadagami too. That's why after that, only you cultivate the four foundation of mindfulness. That's the reason why it has to be anagami at least. It still got some clinging. Otherwise, you will be an arahant. Mm. So that is the added understanding. Eh? Okay, let me continue.
2.2, question 2. Why is the Bodhisattva way of cultivation not much emphasized in the Theravada tradition? What is emphasized is mainly the sainthood ways culminating in arahantship. Brother Chio replied, the Buddha at that time in Kosambi gathered a handful of leaves in his hand and explained to the bhikkhus then its essential meaning. The Buddha said, even so, monks, many are the things that I have fully realized but not declared unto you. Few are the things I have declared unto you. And why, monks, have I not declared them? The monks are indeed not use. They, monks, are indeed not useful, not conducive, are not essential to the holy life of purity. They do not lead to disenchantment or to dispassion, to detachment, to tranquility, to full understanding, to cessation, to enlightenment, and to nibbana. That is why they are not declared by me. So the Buddha knew during that era the condition was such that the sainthood way via cultivating the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths is the fastest and the most appropriate, hence the teaching then. The other reason could also be because the Bodhisattva way is so much longer, needs aeons and aeons of cultivation to perfect the 10 paramitas or perfections, and this way is so much more difficult. To be a Bodhisattva, one must have a very great compassion and a very big heart to come back for the living beings, and they have to vow to save the limitless living beings. The supramundane mind, via this great compassion and vows of theirs, must arise to cause them to come back again as Bodhisattva, to cultivate the perfection. Otherwise, after arahantship, the form and mind will cease upon parinibbana, and there will be no more rebirth. Okay. 2.3, question 3. Can you elaborate on the second aspect of the five aggregates of form and mind? Brother Teo replied, the first aspect of the five aggregates of form and mind is as a human being. As a human being, we have a physical form or a body and a mind. The Buddha subdivided the mind into four more aggregates of feeling, perception, activities of mind, and sankhara, and consciousness. Activities of mind or sankhara and consciousness. Since the mind is the knowing element, and anything that the mind knows is the form in the mind, hence you also have the five mental aggregates of form and mind within every moment of sense experience or sense door consciousness. This is the second aspect of the five aggregates of form and mind, and the external form enters the mind via the mental aggregates of perception, memory, perception, knowledge, or sanya. Like the external form of the Buddha image, how does this external form enter the mind? Via the seeing consciousness and mental perception via memory, right?
This second aspect, which is the five mental aggregates of form and mind that arise and pass away with every moment of sense door consciousness, is the more important one that the Buddha talks about under his dependent origination or 12 link, Patijasamupada teaching. The text mostly explains the 12 links using the first aspect of the five aggregates of form and mind, with the 12 links occurring only once over three lifespan. And this type of Patijasamupada is of not much use. It explains that dependent on the first link of ignorance or avijja, it conditions karmic volition or sankhara. Then karmic volition conditions rebirth consciousness or vijnanam. And dependent on rebirth consciousness, form and mind or namarupa, the human being, comes to be. Dependent on the human being, the sixth sense basis or salayatana comes to be. To them, this is the only usual logical way of explaining it. Whereas the actual 12 link using the second aspect can also be explained if one understands how our mind functions or operates as taught by the Buddha. According to the Buddha, the dependent origination occurs within every moment of sense door consciousness. That is dependent on ignorance, not understanding the truth and wanting to know. It conditions mental volition or activities, mundane perception and thinking, etc. Then dependent on thinking or mental volition, it creates mental context that triggers off mental or thought consciousness instead of rebirth consciousness. Because mind is also an organ, then dependent on mental or thought consciousness, the content of consciousness will follow to arise the five mental aggregates of form and mind, second aspect. This dependent on this form and mind, there must be these six sense bases. Hence, the flow of dependent origination as taught by the Buddha. This second aspect is seldom taught because it is very difficult for most cultivators to have the understanding to share unless they themselves have realized the Patijasamupada happening within their own form and mind.
Continue.
Okay. 2.4, question 4. Why is it that my mindfulness could only sustain for a while, and I find it very difficult to cultivate the daily mindfulness when I'm working? Bodhichitta replied, when you understand what sati or mindfulness is, then you will know how to train your mind to be heedful throughout the day, and daily mindfulness can be developed and stabilized even in the midst of life and work. When I was cultivating about 20 plus years ago, I was also working as a civil engineer, and the place I worked according to my boss and my predecessor was like a madhouse. I was the head of the maintenance and technical department of the property office, a super scale post with a staff strength of 800 plus responsible for the overall upkeep, maintenance and development of one main and two branch university campuses. This job comes with a lot of responsibility and work pressure. Yet I was able to cultivate, and my daily mindfulness was not a problem. So it all depends on you, and if you are sincere and serious about life, then the cultivation will take off and there will be no problem. You must know how to plan and organize your work well, then you will be able to do it. Like what I did, within a period of 2 to 3 months, the whole madhouse department was transformed, and I was able to settle down to do my cultivation, and soon I became quite free after I had managed to standardize into annual contracts most of the essential routine maintenance work. That was the reason why while working, I could still meditate daily.
off and on.
Off and on can still go for meditation retreat and spiritual trips, etc. With my wife and two children, aged 4 and 6, I followed a very strict daily religious routine and meditate very often. I will meditate early morning when I woke up before I start work at office, at lunch break, and whenever I have free time and before I sleep. Even during meetings, then later when my daily mindfulness meditation had stabilized, I was able to meditate throughout the day and even into my sleeping moments. Like I hardly sleep and I was fully aware and awake most of the time.
So this is to give you faith. It can be done, not a problem. So this one is a very good example. Continue, Tammy.
Okay. 2.5, question 5. What is the difference between forest and ordinary city monk?
This type of question also have. Do you all know the difference before you read my answer? Is there a difference between a forest monk and a city monk? What does a city monk do? What does a forest monk do? No idea. Anybody got any experience? Want to share? Put up your hand. Nobody? Again want to wait for answer. Try. Anybody want to try? Colin. Pass the mic to Colin.
I guess both do the same thing, but just at different environment. Forest, nobody.
Yeah, I know, not bad. That type of answer is a smart answer for a city dweller. For a best, you cannot fault his answer. Isn't it? Both are doing the same thing. Both keep the monk's precept. Understand? Except they are in different environment. So it's actually a very good city dweller answer. Not bad. Thank you, Colin. Very good. Anything else? Anybody else want to try? You see, when we talk about forest tradition, we normally refer to Thai tradition because they continue the Dutanga practice. You know what is Dutanga practice? You don't know. Dutanga means in Mandarin, Ku Sing. Ku Sing. You heard of Ku Sing or not? In English, what you call? What you call in English? They go for austerity. During the time of the Buddha, there is one of his senior monk, Mahakasapa. He practiced Dutanga. You know what he do or not? He refused to wear new robe. He go to the graveyard. All people throw away. He gathered all the pieces. Then he used his hand to sew them and make it into a rope. Then he refused to go and pindapa at the rich man's house. Understand? All the wealthy people, he don't want. He want to help the poor. He go to the village. Then he like to live in the forest. Then he go and do everything under austere condition. Then they got tudong. During the rain retreat, they will go somewhere. But after the rain retreat, they travel through the forest. They call tutanga, tudong. In Thailand, it's called tudong. They do a lot of these things. Then their practice is very different. Because they go into the forest. They are with nature most of the time. But city monk, what do? Most of them are abbot, isn't it? Or they got certain worldly duties. Because the worldly lay people go there, do what? Donation, chanting. Then throughout the year, they got activity. What chanting. Then they got this Vesak Day. Or Vesak Day, all the Buddhist society, all the temple look forward. Well, that is the day they receive a lot of donation. And that's also a lot of wholesomeness. So the city monk sometimes, when there is a funeral or what, they go, isn't it? They go there, chanting, cheng cheng cheng, but there are some serious city monk too, very good. Last time, like Chief Reverend, they really do, they help people. Like your house got ghosts or what, huh? Chief Reverend went and help. He do the chanting, but he understand. So, they are mostly involved with activity of the temple, and like Colin say, the environment different. So their job nature also different. They are involved with more of the lay society, the lay people's activity. Whereas the forest monk is devoted to cultivation. They believe in the practice and all those things. So they are very determined. But doesn't mean that the city monk are not so determined. Sometimes you cannot tell. The same city monk could have been a forest monk before, understand? Then after that, people donate land, give them temple, understand? Then they become city monk. But some retain their monastery in the village or in the forest. Like Ajahn Chah, he is from the forest tradition. So all his monastery, Wat Pat Nanachat, Wat Pat Pong, and also the Brahmin, most of them are forest. Because there is the tradition. Okay, listen to the answer I wrote many years back. I also don't know what I write. But roughly, what I tell you should be the gist of it.
Brother Hill replied, "It is just different terminologies used to describe these two different types of monks. The forest monks are those from the forest traditions, especially those within the outskirts of Thailand, where they still practice the forest traditions as laid down by the Buddha. That is, they cultivate following the Vinaya and the Sutta, so as to be worthy of offering, etc. And also on a daily basis, they go for Pindapata or alms round following the Buddha's tradition. However, the ordinary city monks who stay in the city monasteries or temples do not usually go for Pindapata or alms round, and they are usually more scholarly. And since they tend to have more interaction with worldly people, their worldly duties are more, but they also cultivate following the Vinaya and the Sutta. It is a matter of preference or choice, and it is up to the individual. Both types of monks can still cultivate the Buddha Dharma because they are ordained monks following the rules and teaching Dharma Vinaya as laid down by the Buddha."
Very good. But that time I didn't add in the what they call Dutanga practice and all those things. Because that time, people are not ready to accept that type of explanation. Otherwise, they get angry. The city monk don't lie. So I create unnecessary problem. So I must have omitted that Dutanga one. But now I share with you. So it's for your additional information. Okay, part 3.
Part 3, Meditation, email number 4, Second Turning. How to cultivate this second turning wisdom of Chintamayapanya via inquiry, contemplation, and reflection on the truth as proclaimed by the Buddha. 3.1, First Noble Truth, Second Turning. The Buddha said, "This noble truth of dukkha is to be understood." Inquiries. Why did the Buddha say this? It is because the Buddha knew we need to inquire, reflect, and contemplate into the truth he had proclaimed, so that we can truly understand what this first noble truth of dukkha or suffering is. This inquiry can allow us to sincerely reflect, contemplate, and inquire deep into this first noble truth of dukkha, to truly understand what dukkha is before we confront it, so that we can be wary of it. This will also enable us not to be caught in dukkha or suffering. We are not knowing that we are already suffering. 2. How can I develop the understanding of what dukkha is?
One can do it via the above reflection, contemplation, and inquiry into the five daily contemplation as recommended by the Buddha with a very calm and composed mind filled with sadha, viriya, sati, the first three of the five spiritual faculties, following what we have done during the sutta class. For details, please refer to the recorded sharing via web link as done by Brother Sui An. 3.2 Second Noble Truth, Second Turning. The Buddha said, this cause of the arising of dukkha, which is craving, is to be abandoned. Inquiries. Number 1. Why did the Buddha say this? That is, craving, which is the cause of one's suffering, is to be abandoned. If craving is not abandoned, we will continue to suffer. 2. How can I abandon it? To reflect deeply into the Buddha's four right effort and five daily contemplation as advised by the Buddha, followed by the Dhamma on impermanence, suffering, and anatta nature of the five aggregates of the form and mind. To use the four right effort and the five ways as taught by the Buddha to abandon the unwholesome thought and the cravings that will condition our unwholesome action, speech, and thought. As we all understand, finally, only wisdom frees. So to use the fourth way, which is to trace the origination factor, then retrospectively reverse it, to develop the wisdom to free, and this is the best way thus far. This fourth way uses heedfulness to cultivate the mindfulness of the six internal and the six external sense bases via Dhamma Nupassana, mindfulness of Dhamma cultivation, to trace the origination factors leading to the wisdom, thereby enabling one to understand clearly how your mind has been tricked into attachment or clinging and reactive modes via one's delusion, because there is no yoniso manasikara or wise attention at the moment of sense experience. Craving born of delusion is the cause of all our attachments and clinging to our five aggregates of form and mind that condition our suffering. To refer to the 18th of March 2012 Sixth Heart Sutra Part 3 Question 1 Short Notes for details.
Yeah.
Okay. 3.3 Third Noble Truth, Second Turning. This cessation of dukkha is to be realized. Inquiries. Why did the Buddha say this? Why is this cessation of dukkha to be realized? So that one does not have to suffer anymore, because according to the Buddha, suffering need not be, and that is cessation of dukkha can be realized in the here and the now before one dies. The other reason is the second turning emphasized here is on the word realization, because the Dhamma or enlightenment is not a knowledge but a wisdom which is to be realized or awakened to without thought. 2. How can I realize the cessation of dukkha? Realization can only arise after one has trained one's mind to have the initial heedfulness and wisdom, after overcoming covetousness and grief, to cultivate the four foundations of mindfulness and the Noble Eightfold Path as taught by the Buddha. 3.4 Fourth Noble Truth, Second Turning. This Noble Eightfold Path that leads to the cessation of dukkha is to be cultivated. Inquiries 1. Why did the Buddha say this? This second turning emphasis is on the word to be cultivated instead of only to be understood as per the first noble truth. The reason being, Noble Eightfold Path must be a path of you.
A part of you
for you to be able to live it. Hence, understanding alone is not enough. That is, you may understand, but you cannot live it. 2. How can I cultivate it? To contemplate, reflect, and inquire deep into all the Noble Eightfold Path factors, to develop the true understanding of what they are as taught by the Buddha. Like for the first path factor of right view, Sammaditti. What are the three important right view as taught by the Buddha? They are the law of karma, the Four Noble Truths, and the law of dependent origination. One also needs to train one's mind to be heedful and ever mindful with the right sati and samadhi, to see things as they are, following Dhammapada verse 23, which states that the ever mindful, constantly meditative, and the steadfast one will realize the born free Nibbana. 3.5. The third turning is always on the realization and enlightenment part.
Yeah, thank you. So this three turning is very useful, and people don't know how to cultivate them. That's why I describe them, so that you can go into it. Because the inquiry is very important. When you inquire, then only you develop the understanding. Of course, when you inquire, it trigger of the condition for you to contemplate. If you don't inquire, you cannot contemplate. To contemplate, you must have the condition for it to arise. So inquiry allow the condition to arise. Yeah. Because the Buddha mentioned very clearly under the second turning, all the Four Noble Truths, he gave different emphasis. For the first Noble Truth, he said, this Noble Truth of Dukkha is to be understood, second turning. So you have to inquire, why did he say that? How can I understand what he said? So you inquire. If I don't understand the Noble Truth of Dukkha, what will happen to me? I will suffer, isn't it? Oh, then you know. That is the reason why I must understand. Then how can I understand? You check the teaching. He talked about the three turnings. He talked about developing heedfulness, mindfulness. He talked about the eight conditions that lead to suffering. So you have to put into investigation, test it out, see whether it stands up to investigation or not. That's how you develop the wisdom. And I did that a lot when I was cultivating. Well, my teacher advised me to contemplate until very, very clear. So this is how cultivation is to be developed. You need faith. You need sincerity. You need to diligently work on it. And it can be done. It's not difficult. Okay? So at least we cover quite a bit. So the next page we will keep for later. Because today I was told by Padmasri we have to stop early so that they can do the chanting. We can do the chanting of the Heart Sutta, the Great Compassionate Mantra. So this is very conducive, because when we are here, we have to do all these things. Because sometimes it's the devas, the higher beings, the great beings, everything, their nature, they want. Because there were many occasions, because they know this mantra, this Heart Sutta, is very useful, Great Compassionate Mantra. And sometimes, some of the devas, where they live very long, they are from the time of the Buddha until now. So there were quite a number of retreats. Somehow, through Kanyamita, they come and tell me, Brother, they want to listen to this sutta. So when Ingvi come, I think she is a very good Pali chanting Kanyamita. So he helped us to chant the Karaniya Metta Sutta. Then sometimes they want to listen to Mangala Sutta and the various other type of sutta. Then there was one occasion, I think they want to listen to Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. That one very long. So because they have joy, they can recall. To them, 2,000 over years ago, not long. You divide by 100, How many days? 26 days. 2,600 divided by 100, 26 days. Not yet 1 month up there, no. And you think very long. Of course, we look at history. Wow, Buddha born 543 BC. Or 532 BC. 543, yeah? Never mind, not important. So you think very long. They all up there, not yet 1 month. That's why they look down and they say, wow, these people, got people who know how to chant. Oh, we want them to chant. So, could the condition come, maybe we chant. So today we will do it, yeah? Okay. We have to do our evening chanting now. Yun Chan, you want to help? Or together with Li Hun. Li Hun also can chant. Come, Li Hun. My wife suggested you. We almost forgot you. Evening chanting, page 14. English. English. Hey, Yun Chan, where are you? No, you use my mic. Li Hun used the wireless one. So two of you more powerful, one in front, one in the back. Okay. If Li Hun know the Achalo one, I think they all chant very often. So we try to follow Achalo tradition. Okay, I pass to you, Yun Chan.
Thanks. I can't see her.
To the Blessed One, the Lord, who fully attained perfect enlightenment, to the teaching which He expounded so well, and to the Blessed One disciples who have practiced well, to these, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, we render with offerings our rightful homage. It is well for us that the Blessed One, having attained liberation, still had compassion for later generations. May these simple offerings be accepted for our long-lasting benefit and for the happiness it gives us. The Lord, the perfectly enlightened and blessed one, I render homage to the Buddha, the blessed one. The teaching so completely explained by him, I bow to the Dharma. The Blessed One's disciples who have practiced well, I bow to the Sangha.
Now let us pay preliminary homage to the Buddha.
Homage to him,
the Blessed One, the Worthy One, the Fully Enlightened One. Homage to him, the Blessed One, the Worthy One, the Fully Enlightened One. Now let us chant the recollection of the Buddha, a good word of the
Blessed One.
Reputation has spread as follows.
Such indeed is the Blessed One, the Worthy One, the Perfectly Enlightened One. Endowed with wisdom and virtue, the accomplished one, the knower of the world, the incomparable master or guide of those to betray, teacher of gods and men, the enlightened one, the blessed one.
Now let us chant the supreme praise of the Buddha, the Buddha,
the truly worthy one, endowed with such excellent qualities, whose being is composed of purity, transcendental wisdom and compassion, who has enlightened the wise like the sun awakening the lotus. I bow my head to that peaceful chief of conquerors, the Buddha, who is the safe, secure refuge of all beings. As the first object of recollection, I venerate him with bowed head. I am indeed the Buddha's servant. The Buddha is my Lord and guide. The Buddha is sorrow's destroyer, who bestows blessings on me. To the Buddha, I dedicate this body and life, and in devotion, I will walk the Buddha's path of awakening. For me, there is no other refuge. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. By the utterance of this truth, may I grow in the Master's way. And by my devotion to the Buddha and the blessings of this practice, by his power, may all obstacles be overcome. By body, speech or mind, for whatever wrong action I have committed towards the Buddha, may my acknowledgement of all be accepted, that in the future there may be restraint regarding the Buddha.
Now let us chant in praise of the Dhamma.
Well expounded is the Dhamma of the Blessed One, can be realized in the here and the now, beyond timeless, beyond thought, inviting investigation, onward leading to the heart, Nibbana, can be understood by the wise, each for themselves.
Now let us chant the supreme praise of the Dhamma. It is excellent because it is well expounded,
and it can be divided into path and fruit, practice and liberation. The Dhamma holds those who uphold it from falling into delusion. I revere the excellent teaching, that which removes darkness. The Dhamma, which is the supreme, secure refuge of all beings, as the second object of recollection, I venerate it with bowed head. I am indeed the Dhamma's servant. The Dhamma is my Lord and guide. The Dhamma is sorrow's destroyer, and it bestows blessings on me. To the Dhamma, I dedicate this body and life, and in devotion, I will walk this excellent way of truth. For me, there is no other refuge. The Dhamma is my excellent refuge. By the utterance of this truth, may I grow in the Master's way. By my devotion to the Dhamma and the blessings of this practice, by its power, may all obstacles be overcome. By body, speech or mind, or whatever wrong action I have committed towards the Dhamma, may my acknowledgement of fault be accepted, that in future there may be restraint regarding the Dhamma.
Now let us chant the recollection of the Sangha.
Of good conduct is the order of the disciples of the Blessed One. Of upright conduct is the order of the disciples of the Blessed One. Of wise conduct is the order of the disciples of the Blessed One. Of dutiful conduct is the order of the disciples of the Blessed One. This order of the Blessed One's disciples, namely, the four pairs of persons, the eight types of individuals, is worthy of offerings, is worthy of hospitality, is worthy of gifts, is worthy of reverential salutation, is an incomparable field of merits to the world.
Now let us chant the supreme praise of the Sangha, born of the Dhamma,
that Sangha which has practiced well. The field of the Sangha, form of each kind of noble beings, guided in body and mind by excellent morality and virtue. I revere that assembly of noble beings, perfected in purity, the Sangha, which is the supreme secure refuge of all beings. As the third object of recollection, I venerate it with bowed head. I am indeed the Sangha's servant. The Sangha is my Lord and guide. The Sangha is sorrow's destroyer, and it bestows blessings on me. To the Sangha, I dedicate this body and life, and in devotion, I will walk the well-practiced way of the Sangha. For me, there is no other refuge. The Sangha is my excellent refuge. By the utterance of this truth, may I grow in the Master's way. By my devotion to the Sangha and the blessings of this practice, by its power, may all obstacles be overcome. By body, speech or mind, for whatever wrong actions I have committed towards the Sangha, may my acknowledgement of fault be accepted, that in the future there may be restraint regarding the Sangha.
Okay, we will do the closing ceremony following the Thai tradition. Arahang Samma Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Dhammasami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Sanghang Namami. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Li Hun and Yun Chan Sadhu. Yeah, thank you. Pastor Tammy. Pastor Tammy. Okay, we still have some time, so we can still continue. Okay, tell me, chapter 12, page 48.
Chapter 12, Heart Sutta class. 1.1 Appamada or heedfulness means a mind that is ever mindful without thought within.
to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, following Dhammapada verse 23. It is just like a relaxed inner awareness that is always aware and without thought to see things as they are, to see reality or the truth within all mental, physical, and nature's phenomena. 1.2. Applying the 6R technique. While meditating in a formal posture, if one feels any tension or tightness or stress within one's body and mind, then one must just recognize, first R, recognize it, and after that, release, second R. Then relax, third R, into whatever mind state that has energy built up, including all the tightness and the tension that can be felt via a radiant smile, fourth R, and a relaxed inner awareness without thought. The moment you relax, craving loses its strength, and this relaxed and radiant smile step are very important to make your mind feel at ease, light, tranquil, and free. This training of mind will enable you to decondition your mind from its heedless thinking and grasping to sense experiences. This will enable the cultivator to develop a silent, tranquil mind with heedfulness within naturally via the understanding that originally, the true mind is already in the meditative state with clear inner awareness within. So there is no need to do anything but instead just relax and silent via let things be. Then the heedless thinking and grasping born of delusion will slow down and stop on its own via wisdom. The mind will then return to its original state of true silent inner awareness without the thought, the ever-shining nature, which is the true mind will then shine forth. This ever-shining nature, which is the essence of mind, is always there. The fifth R is to return to the object of meditation to train the mind to develop a very stable sati. If this training is still needed, once the mind is already trained and constantly aware in sati or pasati throughout the day, then this training is no longer required. The 6R is to repeat the above training of the first 5R, but need to be careful not to do it until it becomes mechanical or repetitive. This last step must be done with understanding, especially for those who are still trapped in thought-based meditation. Beyond the 6R is the awareness-based meditation, where the new four support of meditation are 1. Relax, 2. Aware, 3. 24 hours awareness, 4. Is trust. Part 2. Kat Sutta Lesson 12. Explanation of the meaning of the text, page 23 to 24. 2.1. The opening verse via Master Xuan Hua. Reversing the light to shine within. Hui Guang Fan Zhao. Avalokiteshvara enlightens all the sentient beings. Thus, he is a bodhisattva. His mind is thus unmoving, ru butong, a superior one at peace, with total understanding of the ever-shining. He is host and master. The first line of the above verse is very important, because most of the time our mind dwells outside to chase after externals, the external appearance that created the phenomenal world of ours. This is also the reason why the Buddha said under Dhammapada verse 1 and 2 that our mind is the forerunner of all things, and mind is the chief. Everything arises when the mind arises. In order to understand what is going on, we need to return the mind to
abide within. Yeah.
So that we can be aware of what is going on within our mind. Hence the importance of reversing the light to shine within, 回光返照. Only then can we be aware of our content of consciousness within our mind. That is how our mind are stirred by externals and conditioned into clinging and grasping after externals created by mind via our delusion and mental aggregates of Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, and Vijnana. You will start to understand how thoughts and feelings arise in your mind with every moment of sense door consciousness, and how they condition each other, how your thoughts with its conditioning condition your feeling, and then how this feeling becomes craving, emotion, to condition your subsequent wrong thought, thinking. All this, if you are not careful or heedful, if you do not develop the mind, the wisdom of Yoniso Manasikara to enable you to see things as they are, clinging and grasping will continue to arise, and dukkha or suffering will be the result. The next verse, with total understanding of the ever-shining, he is host and master. The word host is synonymous to the owner or innkeeper. The ever-shining is our Buddha nature. Imagine oneself as a hotel with six rooms. The six sense bases are like our six rooms, and the sense data or external forms are like our guests of the mind. For example, the guests of your seeing consciousness are colors, shapes and forms, vibrations like sounds, music, noise, etc. are guests of your hearing consciousness. These guests of the mind are not like human beings because they cannot talk or complain. So it is a lot easier to manage this hotel if one is not deluded. The host is always there to receive the guests. The guests of the mind, they will come and go. Hence, they are impermanent. As guests, they are here to stay for a while only, and most of the time they stay for a split second only. But because of your delusion, you cling onto them as memories and give them meaning so that they can stay for a longer period of time, thereby causing you all the miseries and suffering, at times leading to depression. If the mundane mind can reverse the light and shine within, then it can stay aware inside and see clearly how peaceful he is when he just allows them to come and go via perceiving them with wholesomeness and wisdom or right view, and also how he suffers and becomes miserable when he perceives them with negativity via his own wrong views and sakaya ditti to grasp and cling onto them via wanting things his way. This will enable him to develop the wisdom to understand that if he, the host, does not attach, cling and react, then he is always peaceful and is not disturbed by the guests of the mind. Then life is wonderful and meaningful, and the guests of the mind can also be quite fun at times. 2.2 Important notes. 1. Hosts always there to stay, but guests, they come and go. 2. You hold the key to your own life destiny. To be happy or to be unhappy depends entirely on your own choice. So why are you not happy? If we choose to be happy, then no one can make us unhappy unless we ourselves allow ourselves to be unhappy via our own delusion. 3. Thought is like money, and money is neither good nor evil, because good and evil depends on the user. If the user of money or thought is evil, then money or thought will also become evil. If user of thought has wisdom, then thought becomes right and wholesome thought. So, the user of thought is the most important. Hence, do strive on with heedfulness to develop the right view more and more. Part 3, Meditation, email number 4, page 9 of email compilation notes. 3.1. Brother Teo explained that the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths in Pali under the Theravada tradition is very accurate. Mahayana explanation compared to Theravada differs a bit. The problem with most cultivators is they cling on to the first turning and never get down to the nitty-gritty of the second turning, where all the hard work is. To refer to email number 4, page 9 of the email compilation notes on understanding the meditation as taught by the Buddha, dated 14 May 2007.
Good. So this one, you can go to the website, Google. Or you come to my house, I still got the A4 size copy and some photostat copy. Okay, lesson 13. Next page, page 51. You need to rest or not? Kei Hun can read? Come. Our lecturer read better. Thank you. I think 10 minutes for a drink. Need a rest. I saw her read until no sound.
Hey, good evening.
Yeah.
So my name is Kei Hun.
Okay. Yeah. If you want to get married, you see her.
So those Kei who Hun. Cannot remember me, my name is Kao Yin.
Kao Yin.
So I grew up being disturbed. Oh, you be paise, be Kao Yin now. Okay.
Page 51, yeah.
Short notes taken to assist in developing a clearer and better understanding of the sutta discussed. Part 1. Recapitulation and emphasis on the previous lesson. 1.1. Heedfulness means a mind that is constantly meditative and ever mindful to develop clear understanding and wisdom by seeing things as they are. Understanding the importance of heedfulness by understanding the following important Dhammapada verses. Dhammapada verse 21. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. Heedfulness is the path to death.
Heedlessness.
Sorry.
Never mind, slow.
The heedful do not die. The heedless are as if dead. Dhammapada verse 22. Distinctly understanding this difference, the wise intent on heedfulness will rejoice in the realm of the Aryas, or the enlightened ones. Dhammapada verse 23. The constantly meditative, the ever mindful, and the steadfast one realize the bond-free supreme Nibbana. So part 2, Heart Sutra, lesson 13, commentary, page 23 to 25. 2.1. Dhammapada verse 1 leads to suffering. Mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. Everything arises from the mind. If one speaks, acts, and thinks with a wicked, unwholesome mind that has the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, then suffering will follow one like the wheel that follows the hoof. 2.2. Dhammapada verse 2 leads to happiness. Mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. Everything arises from the mind. If one speaks, acts and thinks with a pure, wholesome mind that is free of all the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, then happiness will follow one, like the shadow that never leaves him.
So very easy, your life. Choose which Dhammapada verse you want to follow. If you want suffering, go ahead, please. Continue to be heedless. But if you want to change your life, determined to be heedful, then Dhammapada verse 2 will bring about happiness in your life. It will follow you like your shadow that never leaves you. Okay? Go on, Kyo.
Okay. 2.3, question 1. Why is the teaching or Dharma as taught by the Buddha during his time becomes different as it gets passed down over the years? Brother Theo replied, because the Dharma was passed down by using words and speeches which are verbal in nature, and as we all know, words are subject to various types of interpretation, hence the deviation. For example, when asked about what is the first noble truth as taught by the Buddha, more often than not, we get the standard and very popular accepted answer, life is suffering. And this is very dangerous because the Buddha never said that. The Buddha instead proclaimed that there is a first noble truth that explains clearly what dukkha or suffering is, and according to Lord Buddha, there are 8 conditions in life or realities of life and existence that give rise to suffering when one confronts them without wisdom. They are the realities of birth, getting old or old age, sickness, and death. When you are with people whom you don't like, when there's separation from your loved ones and your prized possession, things that we hold on to dearly, when you cannot get what you want, or when things don't go your way, etc. No matter who you are and how wealthy or powerful you are, if you live long enough, you will confront all of these realities of life and existence. The Buddha then went on to proclaim that there is a cause behind all suffering, and the cause is always craving born of delusion. This is the second noble truth. Then under the third noble truth, the Buddha said, suffering need not be, because there is a noble truth that explains the possibility of the cessation of all suffering in the here and the now. Then finally, the Buddha taught the fourth noble truth, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha, namely the Noble Eightfold Path. And if one cultivates this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all dukkha or suffering. 2.4, important definitions. I cannot pronounce this.
Zi zai,
meaning me in the moment, and it means at ease. 2, false thinking, means heedless thinking. 3, one is not right here.
Yeah, or aware within, means lost in thought. Yeah, what happened? Oh, never mind.
I've asked to tone down because I'm too loud.
Yeah. Sorry. We have to close the window, sorry. Yeah. It's okay,
So 3, one is not right here, or aware within, means lost in thought.
Yeah.
And 4, first pronunciation, jiao, is it?
Yeah, jiao.
Means enlightenment, or second?
Jue.
Means jue, to stir up trouble.
Yeah.
Part 3, meditation. Email number 4, 3 turnings of the fourth noble truth. 3.1, training of the mind to be heedful. 2 steps is involved. 1, by mind sweeping method plus metta plus 6R plus object of meditation. 2, then finally, silence your mind to be heedful within by letting go of the object of meditation That is, mind is constantly meditative and ever mindful to cultivate the Eightfold Path. The mind sweeping method is a very good and useful, skillful means to train the mind to be at the location you want it to be. And it also trains you to feel and not to think. Then you continue to relax whatever tension, tightness, and stress within the location you feel, like your forehead, etc., to enable you to be in a state of relaxed inner awareness, to realize the tranquility, peace, quietness, and calmness within when there is no thinking. Then your mind will be peaceful, at ease, and without thought, hence deconditioning it from your habitual heedless thinking and worrying, etc.
Yeah, the advantage of mind sweeping method is a lot. Huh? Like what I explained here, it will give you the ability to train your mind to be at the location you want it to be. You want it to be at the forehead, you silence everything, you go to the forehead. Then you feel. Then you sweep it down. It can stay at the eye muscle. Then any tension, any tightness, any stress within, you relax it. Then your facial muscle. So as you do this training, you develop the skillfulness or mindfulness to be at the location you want it to be. So you want it to be at the heart, it will stay at the heart. You want it to be at the stomach, it will stay at the stomach, aware there, then abdomen, eh? Then buttock, then your leg. Wherever you want to locate your awareness, it will be there because you have trained it. So that is the first advantage. Then what you do is, when you are there, you're supposed to feel, you're not supposed to think. Feel means any tension, any stress, any tightness, relax. Because this mind, you got nothing for him to do, you know what he will do or not? Huh? He will wander off and think, isn't it? True or not? So mind sweeping method is a good way of keeping the mind within your kaya. But you must give him something to do, something interesting. So you ask him to check, just feel, any tightness, any tension, any stress within. If detect, relax. So you develop training of the mind to be aware at the location you want it to be. So your mindfulness improves. You have that training. You are skillful. You can locate your mind anywhere within your body. Up to you, because you are trained. And you don't need to use a stethoscope to send the mind there, and so, like you want to feel a heartbeat. No need, because your awareness is there. You have trained. You stay there, you will detect everything. You become very sensitive. So when you are able to do that, then you constantly just feel and relax. The heedless thinking is deconditioned. No more. That's why after mind sweeping method, you feel calm. You feel peaceful. But not lasting, because you have not stabilized it. So what you need is, you stabilize that mind state that you have temporarily developed. The inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. Because you don't think anymore. You just feel relaxed. Yeah. Then you have to stabilize it. To do it, Adeline, they are here, Sadhu. Yeah. Oh, the daughter also here, Christy. Welcome, Sadhu. Yeah. Just join in. Yeah. We are going through the Heart Sutta book, Sadhu. Go ahead, Sadhu. Yeah. You didn't bring your Heart Sutta book, there are still one or two there. They just arrived. I think Garrett also arrived, Sadhu. So tomorrow, Eng B, they all will arrive, Mrs. Ho and Joseph. Joseph. Okay, join us. Where was I? Oh, very good. Thank you. So you train your mind to be at the location you want. Then you feel relaxed, no more thinking. But after that, your mind feel more calm, more peaceful. But this mind is not stable. Because you get it through a skillful means, understand? So how to stabilize it? That's why I advise you to follow the Buddha's advice. Anchor it to Anapanasati. Then your awareness move it to the breath, means in front of your nostril. Then silence everything and detect the breathing. Then breathing in your awareness together with it. Breathing in aware, breathing out aware. You continue to do. Every time the mind wanders off, bring it back. Wanders off, bring it back, train. Not long, maybe 5-10 minutes, it will stabilize. Then when it stabilizes, you become like skillful. The anapanasati will move naturally without thought. Then you can develop the inner peace, inner calmness, meditative joy. So this meditative joy, sometimes they use the word rapture. You can like have this feeling of rapture, especially people who are new, who experience it for the first time. It's really, really very calm and a lot of joy. It's like rapture inside you. Then you continue to relax, silent. Then it becomes more and more refined until that grosser piti transform into sukhang. Then the mind enter blissfulness. It become very blissful. Those who have gone through, they will know. Then after that, it will become more and more quiet as you relax into it more. Until the breathing almost stop. No more breathing. They call it the subtle breathing. Very short, very subtle. It's actually internal breathing. Like you no need to breathe, but you won't die. Then during that time, your mind enters sati. That's what you're supposed to do. Train that mind until the pasati, very stable. Then when it arises, don't do anything. Just silent. Then if you want to, move it to the heart. Or then it will detect all the vibration. Everything very clear. Then stay there. Be with it. To stabilize the mindfulness awareness. Then after that, if the mind really enters sati, when you come out of the meditation, everything is in sati. Your movement, your activity, all move as one. Then you realize very easy to be mindful. You hardly got any thought. Well, most of the time you are aware. First, you anchor to the body. Then later on, you are seeing consciousness. Every moment of seeing is with awareness. The awareness of the whatever phenomena. It can be a moving car. Your awareness and the car move as one. That's why you don't stay and perceive and get yourself entangled, lost in thought. Then you see nature, the flow of nature. Then you see your mental flow, your mental activity, everything. It becomes very clear. Because when your mind enters sati, you can see all this. You have your physical flow, your mental flow, nature's flow. And this is what phenomena is all about. And this one is specific phenomenal awareness. It's just awareness. It doesn't really perceive and create thinking. Then if you silence everything and you don't want to allow your senses to come out, then you stay silent. Then that is the spacious awareness without a center. When you just maintain the awareness, release it, silence everything. It may be at the heart or any place. It's actually a spacious awareness. Then you like become one with nature, the oneness nature. You can experience all this. That's why mind sweeping method is a very good, skillful means. And I teach them in the Thursday class. So have this understanding and have faith and try it out. But if you have already developed your spiritual faculty, you no need to use mind sweeping method. Because when you have the spiritual faculty, the mental hindrance is not there, and you know how to meditate, you just relax, silent. Straight away you go into sati. The mind becomes quiet, peaceful. Then the meditative mind straight away arises. That's why no need to train, no need to like do vipassana, all those things. What for? You have to have that spiritual faculty or sati stabilized. Then that mind can meditate, that mind can understand. That mind is in sati. When it's in sati, stable, it can see, it can understand, it can awaken. Otherwise, you use thought, cannot. You're wasting your time. You keep on doing all the noting, verbalization. Your mind is not in sati. How can it investigate Dhamma? How can it see your mental flow, your physical flow, your nature's flow? You can't. So whatever people say, I can see my anger, I can see my thought. Do you think they really see? It's another thought seeing the previous thought through memory. Understand? So normally the case is when they get angry, at the moment of anger, they are not aware. You know? Then after they come out of it, or in the midst of it, they have this thought, no? Ayo, I still got anger. Means they know they are not enlightened yet. That's that. You still got anger, evil root, not rooted out yet. So what are they going to do? They become unhappy. Understand? So they want to do away with the anger. Who wants to do away the anger? Yeah? Your thought, isn't it? Well, your thought tell you you got anger. Yeah? You separate yourself from the anger. Yeah? But you don't know anger is part of you, your content of consciousness. Through your wrong view, you stir and you react. And you don't know. You think anger is different from you. You say anger is bad, evil root. So you know what they do? They try to control anger, suppress anger. Understand? They use the word in Cantonese, yan. You know what is yan or not? Yeah? Patient, yan. Yeah? Like tun luna, luna. Luna, you know her. Huh? So what happened? There is suppression. When people disturb you or what? No, I don't want to react. I don't want to get angry. Well, anger is an evil root. So what you do? You suppress this anger. And so, like you, just now you say, I talk nicely to my boss. I get the thing. But inside, not happy. Means the anger is still there. But you suppress it because you have the idea, the concept of Dhamma. Anger is an evil root. And I must not arise anger. So you suppress. Then you try to control your anger. Don't want to let it burst out or erupt. But this thing is like a time bomb inside. Understand? When you bottle it up too long, one day it's going to erupt. Understand? So that is not the way to cultivate. So they go and control anger, suppress anger. Then they do a lot of funny things to do away with anger. And when you are sleepy, you know what they do a lot? Go and wash your face. Huh? You got the advice before, right? Actually, go and wash your face is not a bad thing. Because when you are here, you don't know what you are doing. Then the sloth and topper, which is mental hindrance coming. Oh, you're miserable. You can see that sometimes. Suddenly, then they become conscious again. They realize they are sleepy. And I said, why do you allow yourself to suffer unnecessarily? You must understand sloth and torpor come about because you don't have virya. You don't have faith, understand? You don't understand what is going on. You don't see the importance of that training. That's why you have sloth and torpor. So never mind. Just let it be. When sloth and torpor arrive, don't get agitated, unhappy. People don't like, I come here to meditate. Instead of getting all the good meditation, I become sleepy. When you do that, you have negative emotion, unhappy. It's a mental hindrance again. So because of that, it will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state. So you become worse. That's why you force yourself to wake up, cannot. Then you try this, try that. Finally, you give up. You go and wash your face. Then come back more fresh. After that, sit again. Sloth and torpor come. Because you don't trace the source of your sloth and torpor. Your sloth and torpor arrive because the spiritual faculty of virya is not there. Faith is not there. So when you understand all this, you will know how to deal with them. So meditation is the same. Anger is not me. When you are mindful, you can see dependent originating. So what I must deal with is my wrong view that conditioned me to stir. And anger is not apart from me. It's the same content of consciousness. It's there because it's dependent originating. So when I know anger is not me, I will not be deluded. I will not go and complain, "Ah, your eye still got anger." The eye is still very big. And the anger is being clung onto. But before you get angry, I ask you a very simple question. Was there any anger? Huh? Before you get angry, was there any anger? Got or not? Don't have it there. Then, is anger you? Cannot be there. Anger come after, isn't it? That's why that delusion, they cannot see. But they still believe I get angry, you know. Anger is them, no. And they thought they are Buddhists, no. They are already progressed certain stage, you know. They must not have anger, no. That is the contradiction. That's what a lot of Buddhists and cultivators try to develop, that type of meditation, which is completely not appropriate. And you do that, you never wake up. You will have a lot of problems. So what you have to do is you must have mindfulness to see all this. Then you realize, hey, I don't have to do anything. The anger was never me. I only need to straighten my view so that the next time I see something, hear something, think, I don't get angry anymore. So that is wisdom, where you straighten your view. That is the initial wisdom. Then your mind in future does not stir like before. Then all these mental hindrances, one by one, they get rooted out. That is what meditation is all about. Okay? Yeah. Then Kek Hung can continue. Huh? Okay.
So 14 Heart Sutra class plus meditation class by Brother Teo at Wu Ping Ching Xia, 24th May 2012, 3 to 6. So, short notes taken to assist in developing a clearer, better understanding of the sutta discussed. Part 1. Recapitulation and emphasis on the previous lesson. 1.1. Within the conditioned world of life and existence, everything is conditioned arising, or they are arise due to causal phenomena, following the five universal nature's law, order, pancha niyama, namely utu niyama, bija niyama, kama niyama, citta niyama, and dharma niyama. Hence, they exhibit the three universal characteristics of anicca, impermanence, dukkha, suffering state, and anatta, non-self or empty nature. The first two are scientific laws, nature's physical law, utu niyama, and nature's biological order, bija niyama. And the next three are nature's spiritual laws, namely karma niyama, law of karma, citta niyama, law of the mind, and dharma niyama, law of dharma or truth as taught by the Buddha. Understanding these five universal orders or law implies having right view with regards to life and existence, and this right view would enable one to have great understanding and wisdom of our existential world. Understanding citta niyama will also enable one to understand how our mind functions following the 12 links or law of dependent origination, paticca samuppada, as taught by the Buddha. The children of today are mostly second generation kids, and nowadays parents are usually overprotective of the second generation children, and they also tend to over pamper them in the name of loving them, hence giving rise to all the related social problems. This is especially common in families where the family members do not have close relationship with one another. They usually lack harmony, and the family members seldom have the opportunity or line of communication to talk and discuss with one another openly, frankly, and sincerely to resolve their life's problems like relationship, health, career, financial problems, etc. Do learn to play your role as responsible and good parents by cultivating and understanding the Buddha Dharma or great wisdom as taught by the Buddha, then share them with the children to guide them through life. Your duties or responsibilities as parents are to provide for their basic needs like food, shelter, clothing and education, etc. When they are young and not to pamper them or to be protective of them, advise them accordingly and then allow them to make their own decision in life because it is their life and let them be responsible for their own life decisions and never force them or try to control them in any way that will cause them to dislike you or refuse to talk or discuss matters with you.
Very good. Huh? This one very good. Huh? Otherwise, the other part is karma. If you do that, they hate you. In future, you got parents who did the same thing to you, then you hate your parent. If that is what you want, then go ahead. Otherwise, know your limit. Understand that? Although they are your children, you give birth to them. You raise them up, yes. But they are alive. Let them live. Let them decide. You only advise. You are parent. You should advise them because you have more life experience. Maybe you are not as educated as them. Like my during my era, my parents are not educated, and most of our parents are not educated. Some, of course, who are more fortunate, they are educated. My parents are not educated, but they are very good parents. They are very responsible. So we may be more educated than them, but we understand them, and we really, really have gratitude towards them. For they give us life. They raise us. They love us. They sacrifice for us. And they did so much for us. That's why this type of kindness, like that day I read to you the Ulambana Sutta, how to repay the kindness of parents, the four type of kindness. It's not easy. The only way you can repay them, according to the Buddha, is to bring them into the Dhamma fold. Let them understand the Dhamma. And then you have more than repay their kindness and gratitude. Otherwise, whatever you do, worldly, it can never repay them. Okay, continue. 2.1.
Okay, part 2, Heart Sutra Lesson 14, Commentary, page 25 to 28. 2.1. There is a big difference between emotional love, conditioned love, and metta, which is universal love. An example of emotional love is the usual love-hatred relationship of lay people. One moment they will love each other when things go their way, and the next moment this so-called emotional love can turn into hatred, envy, and jealousy, etc. Then there is the other relationship between parents and children, brother and sisters, daughter-in-laws and mother-in-laws, good friend, etc., expressed as conditioned love that only exists because of relationship bonds, whereas universal love or metta love is, metta is love without any opposite.
Yeah, when you love, when you really have love, metta, it's universal love. You got no opposite. So if love can turn and become hatred, envy, what type of love is that? Means you are selfish. You only love them when they are got something for you to benefit. Understand? Then when you don't like them or some misunderstanding, then you can become angry and the love fly out the window and you become evil towards what has happened. So that is not love. When there is true love, love got no opposite. Love is love. Because there is love. You just love. When there is opposite, then it's not love anymore. There is a conditioned love. Conditioned love is not universal love. Okay, move on.
The mind that has metta is always peaceful and happy without any negativity. It is born of wisdom that enables one to accept the reality of the moment and always be at peace with the way things are, and one's heart is always full of metta.
You know how it can come about. Because they express it through compassion inside. Even when they see people miserable or what, then sometimes people act in a very funny way. But they accept them for what they are. Then you know what they do? Out of love and compassion, they will radiate some pure wish. It's just like Jesus say, they know not what they are doing. Forgive them. You understand? Those people who crucified him, it seems, according to the Bible, they asked Jesus, how can they do this to you? You know, Jesus advised them what? He said, forgive them, for they know not what they are doing. Oh, that is love, understand not? Oh, you get angry, you ain't got love anymore. Then you use your logical mind, knowledge to reason. You reason in what way? Selfish way, because it will benefit you, understand not? But when you have love and compassion, you feel for the people. You realize that it is due to delusion, unskillful action that they do this. Then inside understand, but he has to accept you for what you are. Then after that he already did. May the blessing of the triple gem be with you. Yeah? Or may there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy in your heart. Yeah? So that all this evil, negativity will not arise. Yeah? May you have the condition to realize this beautiful teaching so that you will not become deluded and you will not behave the way you are. You see, instead of hating that person, this one come out. That's what the enlightened being are. That's what the beings with Dhamma will do. That's why what they do is the opposite of what normal human being do. Human being would have reacted and become angry, unhappy. Okay? You read on.
The mind, yeah. Did I do that? The mind that has metta is always. Oh, I finished that. Sorry.
Yeah.
2.2 definition of terms. Samadhi is a mind that collected, unwavering, and unmoving, with total understanding of the ever shining of the Buddha's nature, host and master, meaning fully in charge. Mind is at peace, meaning mind that is heedful, silent, and unstirred. Dharma saying by Master Po Yen Chang Lao is quite similar. Xing Qing.
Po Yen Chang Lao.
Xing Qing, correct or not?
Yeah, correct.
Still or silent mind. And then Wu Nian Yu Zhen Xing.
Wu Nian Shi Zhen Xing.
No thought is true mind.
Dong Nian. Ji Wu Ming.
Stirring of the thought is delusion.
Yeah.
That is understanding, meaning wisdom. Outflows means defilements, evil roots, and delusion.
Yeah.
2.3. The 8 worldly conditions, or the 8 wings, or the 8 pairs of dualities are 1. Gain and loss. Whatever there is gain, there is loss. Before you have not. So what you have lost is only losing back what you have gained. We came with nothing and we go with nothing. Then why does one grieve over emptiness in between?
You understand this particular duality, yeah? You know, a lot of people who don't have the understanding, they have problem with gain and loss, especially financial and other things, or when you have business, property. So during financial crisis, you may make a mistake, you get wiped off. Then during good time, you make a lot of money, gain. Understand? Then the Buddha say, gain and loss is a reality. It's a duality of the world. That's why the 8 worldly condition. The Mandarin Mahayana say, the 8 wind. Understand? When they blow at you, you don't have Dhamma, don't have wisdom, you will be afflicted, you have trouble. So everybody wants to have gain, isn't it? Yeah? You don't want to have that type of losses and honesty. But my teacher, Ajahn Yantra, very good. He said, don't be upset. Whatever you have lost is what you have gained. True or not? Before you have, you don't have, isn't it? After you have, only you can lose it, isn't it? So what's wrong? any problem or not? Huh? But human being very selfish. Oh. Hey, I make the money already, you know. Now I lost it, you know. That's real money, you know. You think paper? Ah? So they feel hurt, you know. Why? They attach, they cling, they think that is theirs, understand or not? That is how attachment gives rise to suffering. But if you have the wisdom, you know, when condition is there for wealth to come, because I got jhana parami, then I will receive it, like Bill Gates and all those things. But when condition no more, I have to lose it, I will lose it. Ah, with this wisdom, no problem with that. Gain also okay, loss also okay. If you want to have the understanding not to lose, then make sure you take care of karma. Understand? Take care of karma means what? If you cheat people before, deceive people before, or you go and rob people before, you know what happened this life? When you gain all those wealth, you will be robbed. You will be cheated. You will be deceived. You want or not? Do you want your life to be like that? You don't want it like that. That's why don't do to people. So gain and loss is a worldly condition. You must understand karma. If you want to have gain, cultivate dana parami. You will have wealth. Wealth will come after you. And you will receive them naturally through karma. Then if you have been good parent, you will take birth in parents who are also good and will love you, care for you, provide for you, and give you a lot of inheritance. Because you give inheritance to your children, understand? But if you never give inheritance to your children, irresponsible guy, spend everything, some more go and borrow tai long until get into big trouble, then what happened? That is because last time you are tai long, did all these things to people. So now this life come, you become the victim, you irresponsible, you get into big trouble, then you go and borrow tai long. Last time you change place, no? You change opposite role, no? You tai long, you make people miserable, no? You don't know. Then future life, when you have the karmic condition, friction, you get into trouble, you not enough money, you will go for tai long, you will never borrow from your friend or what. Yeah, that is what you did to people. And then the tai long will teach you the lesson that you teach to people. Understand? Whatever you did to people, the tai long will do back to you. So, if you understand the law of karma, the dhamma, how it works and how it functions, you will never allow this to happen. That's why the Buddha's advice is all evil you have to avoid, you know. Not only avoid evil. Sabba papasa akarana. Sabba is all. Papasa is evil. Akarana. You must not do. That's why you have that understanding. You will be very, very meticulous about karma. You will be very strict and very, what they call, serious about life and karma. You will never allow it to arise. That is what a Dhamma practitioner is all about. That is what a person who has the Dhamma will do. That's why most of the Hitlers can never understand. Because they are not scared of karma. They are not scared of committing evil. A lot of people will tell you, "Aiyah, don't talk about all this rubbish. At the moment, no, can make so much money, you don't want to." Especially when you have financial problem, then you are tempted. Then you mix with the wrong people, the heedless and the foolish. You go and see them. You know what they tell you? "Aiyah, don't worry. We go and get one of this deal, finish already." What is the deal? Become a drug mule. Go and try your luck. Or they say, in Cantonese, "Zhou Sai Kai." You know what is Zhou Sai Kai or not? Go and rob banks. Or rob people. Means you team together as a group, you go and do it. You think good money, easy money. But you reap what you roll, what you sow. You plant the seed of evil, you reap the fruit of evil. You cannot run. So if you have that understanding, you will not do all this foolish thing that people do. Okay? So the world, the eight worldly condition is very beautiful. Second one.
Happiness and sorrow. If you cling to happiness, sorrow will be the result, because it is a worldly condition.
Yeah.
3, praise and blame. Wherever there is praise, there will also be blame.
When you are famous, people praise you. But when people realize you have done something wrong or something that people don't like, and you will be blamed. Understand or not? So in this world, like the Buddha say, there are people who will praise you, there are people who will blame you. So praise and blame is a worldly phenomenon. If you understand, you will not attach, you will not cling, you will not allow it to have any influence on you or create unnecessary problem for you. Okay, the last one.
4, fame and ill fame. The same goes with fame and ill fame.
Certain time when people respect you, they praise you, so you become honored, you have fame. But what happened when situation change, condition change? You remember last time? Tan Sri Robert Kwok? Yeah? He was very famous. He got a lot of fame, honored and all things. But then when something happened, people blame him and say all those words. And it happened in life. That's why praise and blame is a worldly phenomenon, a duality of the world. People who don't like him will blame him, will say all the bad things about him. But people who really know him and understand what he has done for our country, for a lot of people, you will actually appreciate what he has done. Well, when I was in the uni, I was told he got a foundation, no, Kwok Foundation. Do you all know that? Oh, you know, you are a recipient. Wow, sadhu to you. Yeah, very good. And you know how I know or not? Well, I got a classmate whose family was actually financially not so okay. So they came to uni. They got one term to survive only. They got fee for one term only. And they were so desperate. They went all over and applied for scholarship or loan. They cannot get. But that time was difficult. So we were lucky, myself, Kedah State Government, he funded my education. I got a Kedah State loan. So these people were so desperate, then I knew of a few who were from poor family. And you know what they told me, Luckily you got Robert Kwok Foundation. They just write a letter there, No question asked, No question asked, But they didn't give much. If they give you scholarship or loan, then they will call you in an interview and people will come and check you out. But for this type of people, they know, genuine one, they just have to check whether it's genuine or not. They just send you 500 ringgit straight away to you. And they receive it. And they were very, very thankful, full of gratitude. Because that is real emergency money that they need, Then later on, they apply to the university for loan. So the university also quite good. That time I was in MU. If you genuinely poor, they got some fund allocation. So they give you like bursary. Like not much money, but every year is a bursary. It's a support. Understand? So a lot of this thing, you yourself must have the understanding that you know that these are genuine organizations who really help people. Like our Dennis case, you really, really have respect and gratitude towards them. Then they are people that are honorable. That's why they are famous. But people who don't understand, they have evil intention, they think negatively, and they talk bad about him. Understand? And they say, he is a Malaysian, he never come back and help Malaysia. But what he has helped, nobody know. And some will know. During the early years, when I was graduate, I just came out into the job market. Then I was very good at share investment, so I was involved. Then I remember the listed company, MISC. He was the one who started it. And the federal government, Razak time, Tun Razak, he went and actually, I don't want to call it arm twist. They forced him to allocate the share just like that. Then, that time, a lot of MCA people connected to the government, they received a lot of share. I got one classmate, the father, he is also one of the wealthy people in Alostar. He was the head of the Chinese Chamber of Commerce, I think.
He was allocated a lot of that share. At that time, nobody won, no, he said. They all don't understand, no. They say, most of these share, no value. But because he believed in Robert Kwong and Hosea, he take up everything, no. People don't want he take up. Well, after that, the share went up like anything. No. He make his money. That's why you must have faith. You must understand. People who genuine really have the parami. They are the people who will be successful. So you follow them. You will never go wrong. Understand? Okay, we go on. The last part.
Do not cling to the eight worldly conditions by understanding the importance of cultivating the equanimity of enlightenment factor needed to liberate the mind. Part 3. Meditation. 3.1. Deeper states of meditation are needed to allow the stillness and cessation to develop and stabilize by wisdom. The two main purposes of meditation are 1. To stabilize the silent and tranquil, heedful mind by a combination of relaxation, clear awareness, wisdom, and understanding. 2. To use this still, tranquil mind to investigate clearly into all the dharmas and the phenomena both internally and externally within life to realize the wisdom and the enlightenment needed to free the mind. Bharatiya also shared with us his own cultivation and how he came out into the private sector to test himself in 1989. For details, please listen to the 14th Heart Sutra recorded dated 25th May 2012. Brother Teo Ket Kun, 28th of May 2012.
Yeah, it's all in the website. Yeah? You go and Google the 14th Heart Sutra, you can listen to it, the sharing. Okay, chapter 15. We got another 10 minutes. After that, we have
15 Heart Sutra class plus meditation class by Brother Teo Ken Kun at Wu Ping Ching.
No need to read that one. Straight away go to part 1.
So for 1.1, according to the Buddhas, mind is the forerunner of all things, and mind made are they. Hence, through mental consciousness, we can conceive the phenomenal world of consciousness. All of the physical, mental, and nature's phenomena within life and existence. Definition, anything perceivable by the mind is phenomenal. Contemplative wisdom can arise when you silence your mind to reflect, contemplate, and inquire into the Dharma as taught by the Buddha. Be aware and mindful of all physical, mental, and nature's phenomena within your daily life to see clearly their moment of arising, its sustenance, and passing away of all phenomena, and to realize the penetrative wisdom born of bhavana or cultivation of the four foundations of mindfulness. With the silent mind in pure awareness, one can be aware of all the vibrations and phenomena within one's form, body and mind. One will be able to perceive deeper into one's mind's consciousness. All phenomena can be perceived via the silent mind, and it can also witness how they come and go, arise and pass away, their birth and death, and hence realizing their impermanence and empty or non-self nature. You will see them everywhere, from your bodily vibrations to your heartbeat, your pulses, feelings, thought activities, perceptions, and consciousness, physical, mental, and nature's phenomena, etc. You only have to silence your mind to see them all as they are. When you perceive via what you perceive via your mundane or thinking mind is not a real condition, because they arise by thought, which is response to memory. The reality before the knowing is very different.
Different, yes.
Human beings have the tendency to react to sense experience because of ignorance. To solve human beings' problems or suffering, one needs the Dharma. Life without Dharma is not easy to cope.
Agree or not? Yeah? Life without Dharma is not easy to cope. Yeah?
Okay. When you know the Dharma, that is not easy.
Go on.
Without the Dharma, there will be delusion and ignorance with regards to understanding who you are and what you are. Without self-knowledge, one will grasp and cling to one's five aggregates of form and mind, hence conditioning one's dukkha or suffering. Samsara, or wheel of life within existence, can also take the form of man and nature must harmonize, and there are five universal laws or orders that govern nature. These five laws, which two of them are scientific laws, Utu Niyama, Bija Niyama, and the other three are spiritual law of karma or karma niyama, law of the mind or citta niyama, and finally the law of truth or dharma niyama. When you have the right understanding or right views with regard to these five universal orders, law, which are like the secrets of life, then you will know how to live life. When you know how to live life, you will know how to experience all of the wonders and the beauty of life. Then life will be very meaningful and beautiful. That is true emptiness is wonderful existence. Understanding the three right views with regard to the law of karma, the four noble truths, and the law of dependent origination or 12 links is very important, because it can transform your understanding of the Dharma to enable you to live the noble life. Thought is limited and egoic, hence it cannot free you. True mind is only pure awareness without thought. As such, it can see things as they are without the conditioning. One will come to understand clearly that in the seeing, there is only the seeing consciousness, no one to see. That is, before the knowing and before the delusion or sakaya ditti carries through to condition you into grasping and clinging onto what you see. Your craving or reactive mental intention is due to your habitual tendency born of wrong views. 1.2. Understanding thought and consciousness. Once we input the content of consciousness into our awareness, then consciousness becomes the thought. Hence, thought equals consciousness plus its contents. Initially, before the knowing or the arising of thought, there is just this spacious awareness. The moment you focus on something, you input the content of consciousness, then consciousness becomes restricted or limited and becomes a thought. Take, for example, seeing. Initially, in the seeing, there is only the seeing consciousness, no one to see. But the moment you are preoccupied with what you see, and without the wisdom, yoniso manisikara, at the moment of sense experience, then the egoic mind, born of sakaya niti or wrong view with regard to the atta or self, has already arisen, causing you to grasp or cling on to what you see. Then your habitual tendency of likes and dislikes, of pleasant and unpleasant, will arise to condition your hindrances of mind to arise. As form is a product of thought, hence thought can see form, but form cannot see thought, because thought has got higher intelligence than form. Likewise, Since thought is the product of awareness, hence awareness can see, but be aware of thought.
No, can see or be aware of thought. Yeah. Read again. Yeah.
Let me read again. Yeah. Sorry. Likewise, since thought is the product of awareness, hence awareness can see or be aware of thought,
but thought cannot see awareness.
Cannot see awareness?
Because awareness has got higher intelligence than thought, which is limited and egoic.
Right.
Do you know why thought is limited and why thought is egoic? Your thought is respond from memory. Memory is from the past, conditioning. Before you become enlightened, this memory has delusion. That's why it's egoic. It has self-delusion. Then how do you create thought? You have been born since birth until now. You have been creating thought all this while. But how did you create thought? Correct. But how did it happen? You know memory. Yeah? Respond to memory, it come out. But what is thought? Before thought is what? The pure mind, the pure nature, awareness. So this awareness is just spacious awareness. Then what happened? You create a thought. How do you create a thought? When you perceive something in there. Correct or not? Of course, through your senses lah. Then when you perceive, what happened to the spacious awareness? It shrinks into that object. Understand or not? That's why from the spacious awareness, it shrinks to the object you focus. That's why you perceive it. Understand or not? Then you input the content, it becomes a thought. That's why that thought from the spacious awareness, which is unlimited, limitless, suddenly shrink into a limited space. Then you input the content. That's why thought is limited. And thought being deluded before you are enlightened is egoic. So how can you use thought to meditate? Thought that is egoic refuses to die. Thought that is egoic is selfish. Can have emotional negativity, fear, worry, anxiety, phobia, and all these things. That's why when you meditate, you see all these things. Then you realize the thought is not me. Thought is dependent originating, dependent on the user. If the user is deluded, thought is wrong thought, deluded thought. You understand? That's why the user must have wisdom, understanding. Then the user that have the wisdom and the understanding will know how to use thought. Then thought become like what the Buddha say, right thought. That's why Noble Eightfold Path is when you become enlightened, you have right view, you can arise right thought. Then the right view will condition the right thought. Right thought will condition action and speech. That is from your thought, your mental intention, you condition action and speech. That's why when the first power factor right view is wrong, you don't have right view, then you cannot arise right thought. Without right thought, you cannot arise right speech and right action. Then the right effort also wrong, sati also wrong, everything fall apart. That's why first power factor is right view. You must have right view. And right view is wisdom, right understanding. Foremost, number one power factor in Noble Eightfold Path. That's why it's very important that you have right view. Otherwise, you cannot have wisdom. When you have right view, you know how to straighten your view, then that is wisdom. Yes. Yeah, pass the mic to Garrett. Yeah. Yeah, Christy. Thank you. Yeah.
We understand there are three stages of consciousness. Either you are conscious, you are unconscious, or subconscious.
Or unconscious.
Yeah. So, can I refer this habitual tendency as an action of subconscious?
Oh, okay. That is your question. Yeah. Habitual tendency. Yeah?
Yeah.
Actually, it's not really subconscious. You know what is habitual tendency or not? Something that you repeat habitually, mechanically. Understand or not? You are still conscious, but you got no control, understand or not? Yeah, it is a habitual tendency that you constantly do. So it becomes like reflect action. You understand what is reflect action? Yeah? Ah.
Sometimes when we react, right? Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how people say it, like, no? I just instantly react.
Correct.
Due to my subconscious.
No. Wrong.
So I
will really explain confused. To you. Yeah, okay, I will explain you. To you. You're off the mic. Thank you. You see, he say due to your subconscious, but he doesn't understand habitual tendency come from your habit. Understand not? When you continuously repeat that thing, then it becomes a habit. That's why it becomes mechanical. Krishnamurti call it mechanical. Mechanical means what? No need to think one. Like my daughter say, automatically you just lock the car. And so, then sometimes you drive home, automatically you go the same route. You realize or not? Then your wife, sometimes my wife will say, hey, where are you going? Oh, the habit. Because we are so used to what we are doing. That is habitual. And that is not subconscious. Subconscious is when you are not at a conscious level when you sleep. When you sleep. Okay? Before you go into deep sleep. When you go into deep sleep, it's unconscious. Yeah. But if you got dream, you are not in deep sleep. When the operation theater, surgeon, when you go, when they put chloroform to numb certain part of your brain, after the operation, you got no memory at all of what happened. That is the unconscious. Means the bhavanga flow, but the conscious part of the brain, that trigger of consciousness, is switched off. That is the unconscious. But when you are in the subconscious, means you are not conscious as a human being. Understand? You are in a sleeping state. But you are not in deep sleep of unconscious mind. You are in a semi-conscious. That's why you dream. You know what is dream or not? Subconscious release. All of your phobia, your attachment, your craving, your clinging, and all those things that you accumulated, it creates disorder in your brain. You know what is disorder or not? When the country is in disorder, what happens? There is riot, isn't it? There is chaos, isn't it? True or not? So when your brain, when you don't live your daily life with wisdom, with understanding, with mindfulness and heedfulness, you create a lot of attachment without you knowing it. Then all this went in through your clinging, through your delusion, through your lack of understanding. Then you worry about this, worry about that. Then a lot of things you want to remember, because this thing is important to you. And most of it is your problem, especially when a person has health problem, financial problem, or police case, drug case, and all those things. You have a lot of this haunting you, understand? That's why this is what they call your accumulated fear, scars of memory, whatever people have done to you, your phobia, and all that. So these are accumulated. And I tell you, you will become cuckoo if you don't release it. So how to release? When you sleep, the subconscious release, zoom, come out, like dream like that. Sometimes you're not aware, that's why you don't know what that thing is. But sometimes if that fear, the phobia is so strong, you got nightmare. And the nightmare keep on repeating. Especially university students. You always dream you haven't finished your exam. You agree, huh? That is your subconscious. You have exam fever, fear, phobia deposited inside there. Let's say you always dream, although you graduate, become husband and wife, got children already, then maybe grandchildren, you still dream that you haven't passed your exam. You still fail your chemistry, because you repeat or you refer. So all these are your phobia, your fear, and they have to come out through your subconscious, really, because you are not fully conscious. Subconscious, it release. Have to do chanting. Habitual tendency, I told you, things that you repeat. You constantly repeat, no need to think. Wait, I explain to you. Give me one more minute. You see, when a person is depressed, what happens? Not always negative. The cocoon of thought keep on repeating like a tape recorder. Understand? So what happens after it become like that? So it keep ongoing in their brain. No? Yeah. So these are the people, no need to think already. Every time you talk to him, he's not listening on. You know what he do? He want to tell you the problem he has. He keep on repeating one. Then you try to sometimes corner him, like I did to one of the lady. I corner her. No? I say, you just now say like that. Then now you don't agree, you say you didn't say. Then you know what he replied to me or not? He finally kena corner, is it? I hate my husband, is it? Huh? He used that word, no? At first he tried to pretend to tell me something else. No? Then I knew what his mind was doing. No? Then he tell me, no? That's what I am. I hate him, that's why I did all these things. Then only the true color come out. And you know how all these things come about now? Because when he is depressed, when he think of this, he or she, they become very unhappy, you know. It's like somebody scolded you or offended you or mistreat you. You come back, you're very unhappy. Then what you do? You think, how can this guy do this to me? He's so unreasonable. I'm going to deal with him. Then you plan, you scheme. Next time he say this, you already plan how to reply. Then the next time when you meet him, you think you got to plan or not? Like a submachine gun, it will come out and it's like, you think this one is not habit. This is a habitual tendency. You plan it. This is what you want to say. And you have been doing it so often without you knowing it, that you are not aware. If you are aware, it cannot even start all this. But this will lead to wrong thought, karmic negativity, evil root, bring about downfall. That's why the enlightened being, the cultivator with the mindfulness, is very sensitive. They cannot allow this to arise. There is no chance at all. Now you understand? Habit comes from constant thinking, constant repeating. That's why it becomes mechanical. Mechanical means what? You already pre-planned, that's why not. The moment he says something, wow, all those planning all shoot out already. You think you're very good. You also do like that. Especially you argue with your own spouse. Because when he corner you, he say, why you like that? Why you so stupid? Every time I tell you to be mindful, you don't want to be mindful. Then you got angry. You think you very different. You also like that. Last time you did like that, like that. So, want to be right. The ego. Fight with another ego. That's how the disharmony comes. That's how the misunderstanding comes. So when you understand, what is there to argue? No need. He want to be right, let him be right. Understand not? Then when he realizes that you don't respond, you know what happened? He starts to look at you. Because you need two actors to play the role, to play the act. So when one refuses to play, he curious, he look at you. Then he will come and tell, I realize you have changed. Then he talk to you nicely. Then he want to know. Then that time you pretend, act. You want to know? Okay, lah, later lah, I tell you. but don't make him angry. You know. Okay, yeah.
Back to Brother Gerard's question. So there are habitual tendencies where you just outright scold, and there's habitual tendency where you drive home automatically. Mm-hmm. He wanted to know which is conscious, which is subconscious.
No, both of these are conscious.
Both are conscious. Okay.
Both of the example you give, driving home automatically and his one, the habitual tendency, they are the conscious mind. But the conscious mind develop habit, understand not? And this has nothing to do with the subconscious. The subconscious, when you are asleep, when you are not in your conscious moment, your subconscious release. That's why the subconscious release will come out. But when the great being come and visit you and want to send you a message, it is not a dream. It is before you wake up. Before you wake up, that moment, that short moment, they know you can be aware if you are a cultivator. That's why the message will come. And you will receive it. And I have received them before.
Sometimes we dream of our... my mother, who has passed on. This dream or this...
Dream of who?
My mother.
Oh,
my mother has passed away already.
So
you wonder whether it's because you miss her or you really...
No, it's because of your conditioning, your attachment. When you constantly think of her, the attachment conditions the subconscious release. Because you're holding on, you attach. That's how it will come out as a dream. Then sometimes the dream is not strong. No proper story on. Very weak. Because you are not really conscious. You are in your subconscious state. Then it come out. Then you can recall a bit. Then later on recall a bit. But when you wake up, if immediately you don't recall, you cannot remember your dream. You realize or not? But if you immediately recall, then that memory is retained. Then you can, like your case, you can tell me you dream, constantly dream and all that. Well, when you wake up, you recall. But if you wait for half an hour or what, you will never remember your dream. Unless you are aware, then different. Then you can remember.
Talking in their dreams?
What is it?
Talking in their sleep.
That one is definitely not conscious, lah. That one is subconscious, understand or not? Means the subconscious sometimes is due to phobia or whatever. Then that one, they call it what? What is that name? You walk without knowing it. Sleepwalking. Then sometimes they talk more. You know what they talk about? They are dreaming actually. Then they say something. So sometimes your husband at the side, I just give a joke, don't get angry. He may call out some other girl's name. Instead of Kat Hoon, my love, what name? Daisy. Lucy. 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 Then you pinch the fellow, what are you doing? What did I say? I'm sorry. Then that time, the story come out, understand? Okay, we go for chanting now. The time is already out. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, yeah, Baba Sri, come. Song. Who else can chant? Heart Sutta and... Come. Pamasri. Oh, cannot. He cannot. Who else can chant? Heart Sutta. You chant. Can chant or not? Heart Sutta and Great Compassion. Come. I pass to you. Without mind. Okay. Without mind. Okay. We turn to our normal chanting book. At the back we have. The normal retreat chanting book also have, page 61. 61, yes. Okay. You want me to think?
Namo Da Bei Guan Shi Yin Pu Sa Namo Da Bei Guan Shi Yin Pu Sa Namo Da Bei Guan Shi Yin Pu Sa Namo 婆罗揭谛是佛蓝楞多婆南无那赖谨墀悉利摩诃盘多萨弥萨婆诃他都树朋尔时云萨婆萨埵南无婆萨埵南无婆伽摩伐特哆耽智他唵阿婆如是卢迦帝迦卢帝依悉利摩诃菩提萨埵萨婆萨婆摩来摩来摩悉摩悉利多云俱卢俱卢伽摩吐卢吐卢发舍耶帝摩诃发舍耶帝陀来陀来帝利尼是佛来耶遮来遮来摩摩发摩来摩地利依悉利悉舍来舍来阿来僧佛来舍利发萨发僧佛来舍耶呼噜呼噜摩来呼噜呼噜悉利娑来娑来悉利悉利苏噜苏噜菩提耶菩提耶菩陀耶菩陀耶弥地利耶那来谨墀地利舍利奈婆耶摩奈萨婆诃悉啰耶萨婆诃摩诃悉陀耶萨婆诃悉陀喻依舍盘那耶萨婆诃那来谨墀萨婆诃摩来那来萨婆诃悉来僧阿穆揭耶萨婆诃婆摩诃阿悉陀耶萨婆诃遮吉来阿悉陀耶萨婆诃波陀摩揭悉陀耶萨婆诃那来谨墀盘揭来耶萨婆诃摩诃利胜揭来耶萨婆诃南无诃来耽那多赖耶耶南无诃利耶婆卢揭谛是盘那耶萨婆诃安悉殿多曼陀来跋陀耶萨婆诃揭谛揭谛婆罗揭谛婆罗僧揭谛菩提萨婆诃揭谛揭谛婆罗揭谛婆罗僧揭谛菩提萨婆诃揭谛揭谛婆罗揭谛婆罗僧揭谛菩提萨婆诃观自在菩萨心生般若波罗蜜多时照见五蕴皆空度一切苦 色不异空，空不异色，色即是空，空即是色。受想行识亦复如是，舍利子，是诸法空相不生不灭，不垢不净，不增不减，是故空中无色无受想行识，无眼耳鼻舌身意，无色声香味诸法，无眼界乃至无意识界，无明亦无明尽，乃至无老死亦无老死尽，无苦集灭道无自依，无得已无所得故，菩提萨埵依般若波罗蜜多故，心无挂碍，无挂碍故，无有恐怖，远离颠倒梦想，究竟涅槃三世诸佛依般若波罗蜜多故得阿耨多罗三藐三菩提故，知般若波罗蜜多是大神咒，是大明咒，是无上咒，是无等等咒，能除一切苦，真实不虚，故说般若波罗蜜多咒，即说咒曰：揭谛揭谛波罗揭谛波罗僧，揭谛菩提萨婆诃，揭谛揭谛波罗揭谛波罗僧，揭谛菩提萨婆诃，揭谛揭谛波罗揭谛波罗僧，揭谛菩提萨婆诃。
Okay, thank you. Let's rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.Okay, we'll do the sharing of merits, transfer of merit, then we end. Akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyantang anumoditwa jirang rakantu loka sasana itawata chamehi sampadan punya sampadanSabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayoImina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo otu yawa nivana patia sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha and all the worthy ones. There we end.
Thank you.